Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
I think that's where you try to get a feel for their personalities. And we have problems when Eagles get involved. You know, I think that's the big part. And that's why I talk about, okay, I got to feel some sense of humility here, you know, from these guys. And can they work together and along with the current staff members? So I think, yeah, it's something that you look at. Because if you have trust and you have cooperation, you can improve. And so can this group that we've put together on the offensive side, can they have trust and cooperation? And I just feel like, yes, they have that.
Head coach Gus Bradley earlier today. This is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Baselli, Jeff Loggeman is en route to the HananiahAutos.com studios. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Busy day at the stadium today. The introduction of the new offensive assistant coaches for the first time. We've had a couple here or there on some Jaguars.com content, but for the first time speaking to the media today. And, Tony, it's funny that that comment there from Gus is about the amount of former offensive coordinators that are in the same room together. A lot of cooks in the kitchen. Could egos get in the way? And I think through the interview process, you find out that that's probably not going to be the case. They're going to work through that.
Well, if Gus, if Gus didn't think they could, right, then he wouldn't hire them.
Exactly.
I mean, you want successful people on the staff. You want people who are good at what they do. And most people who are good at what they do are strong personalities, have strong convictions, and strong opinions. That's all good. You want that on the staff. You want some tension, some, you know, pushing back and forth to get to the right place. You just want to make sure you can do it in a manner that everyone communicates, respectful. And at the end of the day, you have to defer to the guy who's making the call, and that's the offensive coordinator.
It was interesting listening to everybody today, from Greg Olson to Marone to Nathaniel Hackett, the quarterback's coach. Kelly Skipper spoke today, too, the running back's coach. And just how far along in the process they are. It sounded like Doug Marone had watched the whole season last year twice already, so he had a little more of an idea on his position group. Others have, you know, still have to watch the film from last year and really evaluate what is on this roster right now. That's the first step, right, for a new coach, is to figure out what you have, and then you can move on to free agency and do all that stuff, right?
Yeah, you got to coach what you got first, and you got to develop what's on the roster and find out what you have and how do they fit in to your philosophy of what you want to do and how you want them to play, and the style and the manner and, you know, all the different things. And where you see deficiencies, you want to try to help those guys get better and give them a plan and be able to talk them through the process of becoming a better football player at their position. And then you also can evaluate where maybe there's a deficiency or a hole that we need to go find someone else to fill.
As he told us on Jaguars.com Live last week, Greg Olson, offensive coordinator, said everything that this offense is going to do is around the development of Blake Bortles. That's the way it should be, right? As the quarterback goes, so goes everybody. Right.
I like to say, as the offensive line goes, so goes everybody.
I'm asking the wrong guy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
but that helps the quarterback too. That's
absolutely. Listen, you have to create a system where your quarterback can have success, and that guy's got to be successful. He's got to feel comfortable. He's got to be confident. He has to understand what you're asking him to do, and you have to protect him. I mean, that it starts up the offense. In my opinion, the offense is obviously around the quarterback. And that guy's got to be good and comfortable and confident in what he's doing, but it starts up front. And the best way to help a quarterback be successful and to progress and to make the steps they need to, yes, it's working on individual and nuances of his own profession and what he needs to do, but protect him. Every play, every pass play starts with protection, in my opinion.
Speaking of protection, Doug Marone today talking about the scheme. What he was asked, hey, is it going to be a zone scheme? Will it be a gap scheme? Is there some of that? Of course, earlier Gus Bradley said he wants to prefer keeping it a zone scheme. That's the personnel that's here. Well, here's Doug Marone on the possible scheme and learning what players do well.
You know, whether it's outside zone, inside zone, tossing the ball, things of that nature, you know, we'll have a library of plays, but, you know, we'll start to focus in on them once we start working with them. I think when you come in, it's very difficult. You know, people say you can watch tape, you know, and see exactly what's going on. But until you really start working with players, you really don't know. And, you know, I think we can see things on tape, you know, and have a good feel, but to actually make decisions where you're going to move forward in the future, I think a lot of that will come once we start working with them when the OTAs start up.
He's a desk bounder like you.
I guess so.
He went from the JP School of Radio. Right,
runs
there.
In the organization, I guess.
A little desk pounder. I like
that's
it. Making his point.
Yeah, you got to emphatically right. make that
I like
point.
It. But and I agree with him. No, he's exactly
takes
right.
Time. We're not going to find the answer to this until, I mean, way into camp at least, probably. Right?
He's got to find out what guys can do.
Yeah.
I agree with him. You can watch tape and get a sense of what a guy can do and can't do and who he is. But until you meet that guy, because he's going to push them to – even further than they've been pushed so far. And this will be determined. This is a work in progress. I mean, listen, everybody runs about the same thing in this league. Do it out of different formations, different sets, different times, different personnel groupings, different things. There's no magical plays to draw up that, hey, let's just draw this play up and bam, every play works on the chalkboard. You got to get the guys to do it. And you got to coach them. You got to train them. And that's what he's talking about. Until you get into the room with those guys and start, you know, getting a sense and, you know, bumping up against each other and, you know, pushing back and forth and figure out what you have on the field, it's, you know, it's hard to really determine exactly what you want to do.
Like, I mean, there's only so many – I mean, football's been around for a long time. You're not going to reinvent the wheel on the offensive line.
Listen,
right?
I mean, I love this debate, zone, gap, you know, lead. I mean, listen.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think?
I mean, come on. You line up, you do what – you know, you do what you – the personnel grouping fits you best. But just so everyone understands, the Jaguars ran all that last year. Were they a zone-heavy team? Yeah, they ran – some games they ran more power than anything. Or at least a balance of power and zone. They had lead, weak and strong. They had toss. They had crack plays. They had reverses. They had draws. They had, you know, they had it all. Maybe the only thing I didn't see was the old trap play. And, you know, I mean.
You might move him forward.
I mean, so come on. I mean, you can drop all the plays you want. You got to, I mean, it's execution. Listen, there's not a bad play. Now, you can run plays and formations. You're outmanned if they got an extra in the box and everything else like that, and you pick it up and throw it, whatever you want to do. But if everyone, all 11 guys execute on a play, not many bad plays in the playbook.
Yeah, that's true.
Not bad, many bad ones.
There's 11 guys on the other side, too. They execute well.
And they get paid well.
That's what they do.
So that's why it's a great game. That's why we saw what we did in the Super Bowl. What a great football game.
We'll talk about that coming up. Plenty to get to tonight. Reaction from today at Everbank Field. We'll talk about the Jaguar quarterback and maybe some receivers out in California getting some work in as well. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Help your elementary school students submit their entry to the Jaguars Garden Essay Contest by February 16th for a chance to win a school visit from the Jacksonville Jaguars and a football prize pack. For details, visit jaguars.com/essay. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Prime Sport is the leading global sports travel and event management company, offering corporate and fan travel packages and hospitality events for corporations, professional sports teams, and fans. For more information, go to primesport.com. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Jeff Lagerman is here.
I just wanted to say that, yeah, I mean, in my personal opinion,
yes, sir.
And Tony, I don't know if you would agree with me or not, I thought my read of that card last week was much better than JP's there.
Joe? I'm just glad you made it to the show tonight. That's great.
Here's the reality.
You could walk in the studio.
Jeff, the reality is this. You and I both read the cards better than JP. I mean, but we got to give him something to do.
You guys can read him the rest of the night if you want.
Hey, I apologize for being a few minutes late.
That's okay. Just come in and insult everybody.
Was having a
You were working.
conversation with the head coach about his new offensive staff, which he's very excited about.
Sure. We were talking a little bit about it in here. But
yeah, it was fun to get to meet all those guys today. I didn't get a chance to talk with Greg Olson, but I got a chance to talk to Doug Marone a little bit. He actually was in the league when I was early on. He had about 2-3 years in the National Football League, played in the World League, and offensive lineman. And so and he actually was spent some time in New York as a coach. And so we were kind of talking about, you know, hey, where'd you live at in New York, et cetera.
Did you play against him?
You know, if did I did, I don't remember it. You know, I
mean, got to find the film of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I know that he was in New Orleans in 1989, which I think was his last year because he came in 87. So 87, 88, 89, and then he had a one-year stint at the World League. And I think we did play the New Orleans Saints my rookie year in 1989, but I don't recall going against him. It was good, man. It was nice talk with him, and I think he's going to add a tremendous amount of knowledge to the offensive side of the ball and I think immediate credibility with that offensive line meeting room.
We were talking a little bit earlier about the balance of all the experience now in the offensive side on the room. All these former coordinators having to work together and pull the same rope now.
Yeah, and I think it's going to work out fine. You know, I think that when egos get involved, I think that can be a problem. But, you know, I think that first and foremost, you know, the captain of the ship has to be able to have some thick skin and the ability to have an ear. You know, and listen to people. And I think that Greg Olson has that ability. I mean, Greg Olson, you know, one of the great offensive staffs that the Jaguars had was the 1 year under Mike Mularkey. You had Zeke Brakowski, Greg Olson, Mike Mularkey himself knows a tremendous amount about offensive football. Jerry Sullivan, who else was in that staff, Tony?
Sylvester
Croom, yes, who you talk a great big book of knowledge. Yep. I mean, that was a tremendous offensive staff. Now, look, I mean, the regime of Mike Mularkey was a complete and utter failure, but that offensive staff had some great minds, and that offensive staff was a collaboration of a lot of different minds that came together to put together, I think, some really good game plans. They just didn't have the players to execute at that time. Yeah. So Greg is familiar with that.
So that's the argument. Is it the minds or is it the Jimmys and Joes?
Well, it's both.
So it's the Jimmys and Joes before the X's and O's.
It starts with the Jimmys and the Joes, but then it goes back to the X's and O's.
Oh, you got to have X's and O's.
So, I mean, it is both. And I think that Greg Olson has been in that environment to where he's had, you know, plenty of contribution from other sources. I'm excited that, you know, that they've got a lot of different minds to really come together. I like the fact that they kept Frank Selfo on staff to be able to even help that offense in a really a different capacity as a senior assistant to where he can look ahead. And I think by having a guy in that position, what it does is it streamlines the amount of time on a weekly basis to allow the offensive staff to prepare for the week's opponents instead of going back a lot of times and reviewing the past game. And by getting a lot of that work out of the way and done, I think it allows them to do more during the week, of course, during the week of preparation. So, I mean, that's a real positive to have a guy in that type of role who's got the experience of Frank Selfo, and then also to have him to be able to work with some developmental guys that are on the practice squad or guys that are, you know, second or third teamers, the ability to coach them up when the other coach is focusing in on the guys that are probably going to play that week. So I think it's a great setup.
Nathaniel Hackett, last couple of years offensive coordinator and under Marone in Buffalo, he's about as energetic. I mean, him and Gus in the same room has to be something. You can't get a word in edgewise with those two.
I was talking to Dave Caldwell last week, and I was asking him about Nathaniel Hackett because I know his dad coached many different places. When I was in the league, he was the offensive coordinator with the Kansas City Chiefs, and so I had a chance to talk with him a little bit. But the conversation with Dave Caldwell last week, he told me, he said, look, he said, when you have him and the Gus in the room together, he said he makes Gus look like he's low energy. And I was sitting there kind of going, hey, there's no way. Nobody can do that. And after today's press conference, I would agree with that statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and had a conversation
young guy,
with him.
35.
Young guy, right. You know, full of energy. And, you know, when you grow up as a coach's son, I think you're – your IQ, your football IQ is much greater than any other 35-year-old because, I mean, he grew up with it. I mean, that was his life, you know. His dad was a coach, and he was around ball growing up. You know, that's why a lot of people sometimes criticize, like, a Kyle Shanahan and that he's young, and they say, well, it's nepotism. Well, no. I mean, a lot of these kids grew up, you know, with their parents, their dad, in that role and have a much greater mind for football of somebody that's similar to their age because that's what they knew growing up. That's what they grew up with. So a real positive from that aspect that he's a young guy, he's got high energy, and probably much greater experience than his age would actually dictate because of the experience of growing up in a football family.
Well, and that high energy is it's critical. I mean, it's what part of the culture. We talked about culture in the first thing that Gus has created. He'll flourish here, bring more energy. I think, you know, a young set of eyes and, you know, another perspective and, you know, be able to help Blake come along as well. I think it's a great hire. The guy's very highly regarded. I don't care how old he is. And he has been successful. Listen, you might be able to get a job because of your name, but you don't keep jobs just because of your name. And he has been successful and is much desired through this process to be on different staffs because of his pedigree of what he's done as a coach, not his last name.
Well, and one other thing to kind of add about this whole, you know, I guess you could say somewhat of an all-star offensive staff, because I think that some people might term that because you got, you know, former head coach, a former offensive coordinator, a position coach. Greg Olsen comes in with a pedigree of having a background and being an offensive coordinator. You've got a running backs coach with great experience who has made it through multiple regimes in Oakland, which is a sign, I think, of great respect for a guy to make it through multiple regimes. You know, but when you have an all-star staff like that, I think that they've got to have the ability to work together, and I think that they're going to have that. You know, I think that that's one of the things that Gus took his time with, I think, in that interview process and what he kind of explained today about he wanted to be sure. You know, when you have strong personalities, you want to be sure that everybody can work together. You know, and they talked today, and Gus mentioned about having, you know, three generals and one general, and it's better to have one bad general than it is three good generals sure. that can't work together.
That's right.
You know, but I think it's going to work well together, and I think that this staff will grow. And the other thing is that, you know, you want to be able to keep continuity within the staff. And the good thing is that the only person that could really possibly be lost in all this is Doug Marrone if he were to get offered a head coaching job somewhere in the National Football League. But from what I understand, I think if they're multiple-year deals, couple-year deals with everybody across the board. Nathaniel Hackett, who is a former offensive coordinator, the Jaguars could deny permission, much like they were denied permission to talk to different people about the position that they had open.
Well, that's right.
So it looks like the chance of keeping this staff together and having a little continuity with a very young offensive football team is going to be solid, and that's critical.
Do you guys follow the fan reaction after the Olsen hire at all? Twitter and all that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Twitter guy. I mean, was that surprising to you at all?
JP, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but, I mean, the fans know what they know. You know, and the first thing that you look at is success. You know, and so
– What is success?
That's a great question.
Right.
Is success – you know, your offensive ranking, or is success getting more out of what your personnel ranking may be? You know, so I think that, you know, the reaction was kind of expected, and that, you know, he came from the Oakland Raiders, you know, they weren't a very good offense either. But then when you dig a little bit deeper and you look at the scheme, you look at the performance of a very young quarterback for the Oakland Raiders, and you look at some of those numbers, you say, hey, this guy has something. You know, and I think the familiarity with Gus, with Greg Olsen, I think is certainly going to help because, you know, as a head coach, you got to hire people you can trust and hire people that you know. And to go out and get the hot flavor is not necessarily the best thing for a football team.
Well, and listen.
I know you like to spar with people on Twitter, Tony. So
well, I mean, sometimes, I mean, Jeff's right. I mean, fans can have the reaction. They want to win, and they're passionate, and I appreciate that. And the numbers are important. I mean, numbers can tell you a lot, but you have to also look between the numbers and beyond them sometimes and make, you know, even bigger decisions as you evaluate everything. And I'll say this. Is Mike McCartney a pretty good coach of the Green Bay Packers?
Well, Mike McCarthy.
I mean, McCarthy. Yes. Yeah, not Paul's brother.
I don't know about Paul's, Sir Paul's brother.
But is Mike McCarthy a pretty good offensive
Absolutely.
Coach?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He was offensive coordinator at the San Francisco 49ers a year before he got the job in Green Bay. You know what they were ranked that year?
Not very good.
32nd.
Yeah.
Jimmy's and Joe's, right?
It's everything. You have to look when you're talking about a coach, you have to look at the entire breadth of everything. Numbers are part of it. Look at the personnel. Look at the scheme. Look what they're trying to do. Look what they walked into. Look at the culture, the situation they're in. Look at the challenges of coaches being fired in the middle of the season. Look at all of it. And you find out whether the guy can coach ball or not, and Greg Olsen can coach ball.
And he's got a great personality. When Greg was here, we got a chance to know him pretty well. Real even-keeled. In professional football, look, you have to have that demeanor. So you got a real even-keeled guy with an even-keeled approach, and then you've got a high-energy guy in Nathaniel Hackett. You've got an experienced guy in Doug Marrone, who has certainly a very strong background in working with offensive linemen, played the game as an offensive lineman himself. I mean, I think these are all positive upgrades for the offensive staff. And that's the one thing that I think that when they hired Jed Fish that you kind of wondered a little bit about was that it was a very young staff and they really didn't have a lot of familiarity with themselves. And so with Hackett and Marrone having worked together, Greg Olsen being familiar with Gus, Hackett being familiar with Gus, they were basically quality control guys back in Tampa Bay, all positive things.
By the way, the coaches that have left the Jags, Jed Fish is now at the University of Michigan. I think he's
passing game coordinator.
Yeah, passing game coordinator. Terry Richardson's at Maryland. Running backs coach there.
They're good coaches, you know, and I'm not saying anything was bad, but I think the one thing that really stood out, I think, was when you look at the sack numbers, you look at the, I think, minor commitment to the running game with such a young offense this past year. I think those were the things that, made Gus kind of move on from Jed and want to get a guy in here that was going to be a little bit more committed to the running game and developing a quarterback in a little bit slower fashion.
And he said it today, run first, pass off the run game.
Well, look, hey,
the ideal.
You look at Aaron Rodgers. I mean, when Aaron Rodgers first started to play in this league, I mean, they threw the football – not as much as they do now. I mean, you have to allow a quarterback to grow into that. You know, me and Tony had a conversation all year long about, hey, the best thing that you do is with the arm of Blake Bortles. Let him throw it. Yeah, you want to let him throw it. But at the same time, you have to be able to balance a little bit of that desire for immediate gratification for the long-term objective, which is the development of a young quarterback.
Grade me on this one, guys. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here.
Better energy there.
Thank you. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
But I do know that the people that he's working with right now, he's spending time in California with a number of people that I respect and that I trust that understand the quarterback position, not only in terms of the fundamentals and mechanics involved in playing the position, but also the mental side of it. So he's around some guys, you know, he'll be with other quarterbacks. He'll be around a Drew Brees. He'll be around a Aaron Rodgers, or two guys that he'll be working out with. So he's surrounding himself with the right people, and I think that's certainly going to aid in the process.
Jaguars offensive coordinator Greg Olsen earlier today talking about Blake Bortles and his plans in the next few weeks to go out to California, maybe some Jags wide receivers too out on their own. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Boselli, Jaguars Thursday rolls along. You know, it's something Blake had talked about. Yeah, we're going to go to California and this, but that's what you have to do going into year two.
Well, I think more important, I mean, it's important that the receivers get out there and they play catch and work together and get to know each other. And I mean, all that is valuable. The most important thing for him, though, which I love to hear, is that he's around guys like Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. I think for young players, being around guys at your position who have had success and know what it takes to be a pro and to be successful is invaluable. I think that right there, if he takes advantage of it and picks the brains and digs in and does more than just go out there and throw and, you know, the mechanics, he's got to improve on that. He's got to work on those things. There's plenty of coaches who can do that. What they can't do as well as Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees is dig into the mental aspect and the mindset and just helping Blake grow that side of his game as a young player. I think that's just tremendous.
And Tony's spot on, you know, because I think when a lot of young players kind of come into the league, you need to have somebody to show you the ropes, to show you how to study, to show you the commitment that they have. And, you know, like when I came in the league, I had a Marty Lyons, you know, guy that had been around the game for a long time, was in, I think, his 11th year when I came in. And I learned a lot of things from Marty, both positive and some a few that were negative, you know, but you learn from them. And it was, I think it was critical to have that exposure to a guy like that. And Bortles really hasn't had that luxury, although he's got Chad Henne, but Chad Henne hasn't had great success and has not done it for an extremely long period of time. But, I mean, when Greg Olsen mentioned the name Drew Brees, I mean, to me, I'm just like, yeah. And not so much Aaron Rodgers, because, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a tremendous player, don't get me wrong, but he can do things physically that other quarterbacks just can't do. But Drew Brees is a guy who, when he came in the league, he was shipped off to New Orleans or went off to New Orleans as a free agent because they committed to Phillip Rivers. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that made himself into the player that he is today, that learned the game, every aspect of it, and has great success playing at the level that he does because of the mental aspect of the game that he really understands. And I think that exposure for Blake Bortles is just absolutely marvelous.
If I remember right, Olsen had Brees at Purdue. As either quarterback's coach or position coach when Brees was coming up in college. Who's he? You didn't have a guy. Did you have a guy like that, Tony?
On the team? No.
Yeah, not on the team.
No. I was fortunate, though, as a young guy at SC, I played as a freshman, a guy Jeff played against, who was a first-round pick for the Patriots, Pat Harlow, was a senior that year, learned a lot. And then when John Robinson came in, he came from the Rams. And he basically told me and taught me what guys like Jackie Slater did and of how to approach it and what it means to be a pro and how you work. You know, you don't just go to practice. You work before practice. You work after practice. You work on your craft as a –
But the biggest
thing
is
to be a pro.
It's not to teach you how to work.
No, but what
– But how to work.
That's what John Robinson was so valuable. I mean – I'll never forget one of the things. First things he told me when he came in was I was going into my junior year. I'd been an All-American. I thought I was pretty good, and he came in, he just said, "Listen," he says, "let me tell you what Jackie Slater does, who's going to be a Hall of Famer one day, how he approaches his craft and how he works on pass sets and what he does, and how he, you know, and all the things that went into it before practice, after practice." You know, going to USC and guys like, you know, a guy like Anthony Munoz. I remember there was a tape that, I don't know if he sent or what, my sophomore year, and be able to dig in and learn what it meant and how to work as an offensive lineman was critical. So I was very fortunate that before I came here, because coming here as on an expansion team.
Wasn't a lot of that. Not in your meeting room.
No, right. it's a different dynamic. I mean, I was thrusted in as, you know, you're the guy, you know, go do it. And that's fine. And I got a lot of that in college.
With all these guys in California, what can they work on? I mean, if there's a new offense,
body surfing, you know, beach time.
Nice restaurants.
We talked
food,
a little,
good food.
A little bit while you were, we talked a little bit about this last week while you were dealing with basketball.
Yes. Yeah, how'd that go, by the way?
Oh, it went, yeah.
How many times did you stutter and trip over words or anything?
No, I don't do that.
Okay.
Come on.
But what we were talking about is that, you know, when you talk about routes have a number assigned to them.
Okay.
You know, one, you know, seven, a nine, you know, so it's not like all the routes are completely different from one organization to another. But, you know, it's about the timing on the routes. But I think as far as the chemistry between Blake Bortles and the wide receiving group that's here is just spending the time together. you know, to get an understanding of who they are and what they're about. Because I think one of the greatest things that came along in the National Football League was the advent of the off-season workouts. You know, when I came in the league, there was no such thing. I mean, you came together for mini camp, and then you said goodbye, and then you came back together for training camp. Well, Jimmy Johnson changed all of that. And when Jimmy started having success, then obviously everybody wanted to do that. But you build camaraderie, you build commitment, you build relationships with the guys that you're gonna play hurt for, you know, throughout the course of the season. I think that that is probably just as important as having the playbook and being able to execute the playbook. There's plenty of time for that. You got 14 OTAs, you've got a mandatory mini camp, and then you've got training camp. Plenty of time to work on all the specifics of individual plays, but just working on the game itself is what you're going to do in California for that group of guys.
So why doesn't everybody do it? Different work ethic, right?
I think more and more guys are doing that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, and listen, the CBA changing the way it has, it limits your time here in the facility. And so I think it is even more important now to do little things like that. Work on your craft. Listen, if you want to be a pro, you got to continue to work and continue to try to get better. And that's the difference in guys who are, you know, okay and good. And then the great ones take it to a whole nother level.
Here's the thing, though. And what I always wonder about this, you know, because you have this no football conversation rule with the collective bargaining agreement
right. Until
April.
You can talk, but you just can't talk play.
I mean, you remember they had the no tampering rule?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, everybody was tampering. And then they changed the rule prior to free agency where you had a three-day conversation window, you know. And so basically what that did was move the tampering period prior to the three-day conversation period. You know, so I mean, in the back of my mind, I kind of wonder and go, you mean to tell me?
I don't wonder.
I wonder, and I say that just kind of, you know, half laughing.
You know, everyone knows.
But I mean, it's, you know, why wouldn't you want to have your quarterback, wide receiving group have a playbook, you know, in March once you get it all put together, so that when the quarterback walks in the door in April for your OTAs and workouts, that he's got some familiarity with the system. Now, that's illegal, and the Jaguars certainly wouldn't do that.
No, but everyone else does.
But then again, you don't see teams turning teams in because glass houses and all, right?
Look, I mean, that's one of those rules that you just kind of shake your head at. And you certainly don't want to get caught, because the possibility of losing draft picks is the most significant penalty that you could ever get. And that's what the league has really kind of turned to when it comes to competitive advantage things. And that's what you're talking about with TextGate, DeflateGate.
The crowd noise in Atlanta.
Crowd noise gate.
You know.
That.
So you don't ever want to kind of walk around the fringes of that, because you don't want to lose draft picks. But, so JP, if there's a rule, okay, you're my coach.
Okay,
and I'm a player.
I like it that way. Yeah.
And Tony's just a mutual friend.
You need to take a lap.
If you gave a playbook to Tony, who in turn gave it to me, is that illegal?
Say it one more time.
He basically said, if you skirt the rules by you giving me the playbook and I give it to Jeff, is that illegal?
I believe so.
Well, listen.
Right?
I don't.
By rule, probably.
What I don't like about the whole, you know, CBA deal, and I get why they – I don't get why they agreed to it, but they did, is if I'm a player and I want to come work with the coach, I should be able to. It's my dang job. If I want to come out here, and if I'm Luke Joeckel and I want to get with Doug Marrone and start figuring out what the heck I need to do to get better – or if I'm Blake Bortles and I want to sit down with Nathaniel Hackett and Greg Olsen because I want to get better, then why shouldn't I be allowed to?
The rules say you can't.
That's a dumb rule.
Well, how do you change it? New CBA.
It's not going to change.
Come
on.
Yeah, you got to get something, right? You got to give something up to get something.
If you don't have the rule, it could get really abused.
Well, it was abused before, and that's okay. It's called a job.
I don't think that rule's going to change.
No, it's not going to change, but it's a job. And here's the deal. The players got more time off in the offseason, the owners got more money.
and the time off and
– I mean, that's what – I mean, am I wrong?
No,
that's what the CBA came down to.
That was a trade.
I mean, it's if I'm the player, I'd be like, I'll come to work more, and I'll take more money. I mean, it was a terrible trade. Especially if you're a young player, it hurts you. I mean, but that, I mean, listen, we want less practice time during the regular season. We want more control over how much contact we have, and we want more time off the off season. And by the way, you guys can have a bigger chunk of the money. I would have gone the other way. I say, I'll take more pad practices, I'll take longer training camp, and I'll take more OTAs, and you give me more of the money.
Yeah. I call that the milk bone rule.
Come on.
In other words, you know, the players at that time were looking for steak, okay? And Demaurice Smith couldn't produce any T-bones or ribeyes, bone-in ribeyes.
So, you know, they got his hamburger helper.
So what Demaurice Smith got was a few milk bones to throw on the pile to make it look good.
Oh, gosh.
Nice. Speaking of milk bones, come back in a moment, go around the National Football League, including the Cleveland Browns with some issues these days. Join John Osier and me for Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We'll have special guests keep you informed of the latest Jags news. Take your social media questions. Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 1 on Jaguars.com. A look around the National Football League after this. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Love is in the air, Jags fans. Valentine's Day is right around the corner. This year, express your love and affection to that special someone in your life with help from Cupid DeVille or the Roar Cheerleaders. Say I love you with a Jaxogram or a Roarogram, presented by Venus Swim and Fashion. Visit Jaguars.com or call 633-2000. Reserve yours today. It's right around the corner. Limited supplies of the Jaxograms and Roarograms.
I'm sure.
Jaguars Thursday.
Are you going to get one?
I might.
For yourself?
Yeah, maybe.
I'll buy you one, JP.
That's very nice.
I'll show you some love. Yeah, I'll get Jackson to show up on
Happy
your doorstep.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Give you a big kiss.
Yeah. Jaguars Thursday.
Jackson's going to show up on your doorstep, give that nod of approval, have a box of candy for you, bend you over at the stoop, give you a big old wet cat kiss.
That's a little too much info there, Jeffrey.
Okay, right. So what about
Let's
them Browns?
Go around the National Football League quickly, presented by 360 Access. Don't mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure you have the best experience for the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com to learn more. The Cleveland Browns GM Ray Farmer revealed as the personnel executive who sent text messages to the coaching staff during games about play calls.
Illegal.
It's another issue for the Browns. Manziel's in rehab. Josh Gordon's done for the year. What's next in Cleveland?
Probably going to lose draft. I mean, they might lose a draft pick. I mean, nobody outside the coaching staff is allowed to communicate with coaches on the field, especially the GM. You can't be texting down information of what you want to be done.
Well, and as a result of that text gate, you know, basically Kyle Shanahan said, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. That's why he's now the offensive coordinator for Dan Quinn in Atlanta, because he saw some of the dysfunction that was going on, whether it came. And the big question is – was the texting coming from Ray Farmer? It was coming from his phone. That's been reported. But who was having those texts sent? Was it Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns? Was it Ray Farmer himself? You know, and so.
Well, it's only one person above Ray Farmer, right?
That's the owner.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting to see where that investigation leads. But right now, the Cleveland Browns have a mess. You've got that little bit of a controversy going on. You lost your offensive coordinator. Your two first-round draft picks from last year, one of them's in rehab and the other one couldn't even get on the football field last year.
And there's rumors now that they're thinking about trading up to try to get Manziel. I mean, not Manziel, Mariota.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, not good in Cleveland. The fans in the dog pound may be throwing milk bones not at the opposing players on the field, but up towards the owner's suite or the general manager's suite.
Charles Haley has called Tom Brady's Super Bowl rings tainted because of the scandals involved in New England. First of all, what do you think of Charles Haley?
First of all, he is a great football player. I mean, a great football player. The guy, I don't. How many rings does Charles Haley have?
I think five.
I think he's got five because he did what, San Francisco Dallas. And then Dallas. Mm-hmm. Great player. Half crazy wacko, you know. But I mean,
probably
in a good
him a great
way,
player.
In a good way. You know, I was talking to Ronnie Lott about Charles Haley, and he said, look, he said, that guy is great in the locker room, great teammate to have, and he's a great player. And there are a lot of players that probably will say that. I mean, Don Shula came out and said basically the same thing about the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick a few weeks ago prior to the Super Bowl. And that will always be there because of the Deflategate and then the previous one
Spygate.
Where they were filming the signals on the sideline and then supposedly, reportedly, filmed the practice of St. Louis Rams prior to the Super Bowl. Hmm. You know, but that's what makes football great is a little bit of controversy sometimes can be fun.
Until they start forfeiting games, then
no, they're not
really matter.
Games.
Right, that's not
going to
happen.
I'll say this, though.
They won the games.
I wouldn't be surprised if they find a smoking gun. I mean, it's going to have to be like a real, like, for sure that Tom Brady or Bill Belichick either knew about it, I mean, sanctioned it, ordered it, whatever. I could see a suspension.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I'm just telling you, look at what happened.
I mean, how long?
Sean Payton got a year. And
for something that
he got a year
bounty gate,
and basically the commissioner said saying you didn't know what was happening is not a good excuse. You should have known. It's your responsibility. And now I don't think they're going to suspend Tom Brady or Bill Belichick for a year. And I'm not even sure they're going to be able to find enough proof that they knew about it. But I go back to this: no quarterback, especially a future Hall of Famer who now has four rings, but had three before, who had been to five Super Bowls, now six. No way, no how does he not know the condition the footballs are in that he prepares. And no way, no how does a ball boy, on his own accord, decide by himself to go deflate footballs.
I think they should let the quarterbacks put the football pressure, whatever they want to.
And no way was it the weather, because the Indianapolis Colts balls were just fine. Now, is it a big deal? It's a big deal because it's the rule. Now, Jeff's right. I mean, I don't think you should let the pressure be wherever the quarterback wants it, because it is a issue. It is a competitive advantage having the football like that, especially in cold or damp weather, because you can grip it better, throw it more accurately, and hold on to it more securely. So it is an advantage.
But here's the thing that I have with that. Okay, all the rules changes that have happened in the last 10 to 15 years, they've all been designed to create more offense, right?
Yeah.
To create a more effective offense.
That's right.
If deflating a football creates a more effective thrower, hence making a more effective offense, what's wrong with that?
Oh, I don't care if they change the rule, but it's a rule.
I'm going to agree with you. But I think going forward, let them put the football pressure at whatever they want.
The Atlanta Falcons coach and GM reports say that they didn't know about the fake crowd noise at the Georgia Dome. Arthur Blank, the owner, told the Associated Press, I think what we've done in 2013 and 2014 was wrong. So they've admitted that there's some fake crowd noise in the Georgia Dome.
Yeah, and now who's going to take the fall for that?
Sound guy. Joe.
If it wasn't the coach,
going back to what Tony said about footballs, I mean, you know, the ball boy's not going to just deflate the footballs on his own, and the sound guy is not going to pipe in crowd noise on his own either. So somebody's going to have to be responsible for that. Is it going to be Rich McKay? Is it going to be Thomas Dimitroff? It's not going to be Mike Smith. The last thing in the world a head coach is worried about is about crowd noise being piped into the stadium.
He's out of there anyway.
You know, and he's no longer employed by them. It'll be interesting.
There you have it.
Roger Goodell's got a full plate.
Yeah, he does. A few different places. Hey, good job. Good to see you guys again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I can't say the same.
For Tony Pacelli, Jeff Lagerman, and Joe Fortunato, this is JP Shadrick. We'll see you next week, Jaguars Thursday, on Jaguars Radio.